Happy Fat Tuesday, everyone. It's a great day to indulge. And we're going to indulge you right now with a preview of one of the longest-running fringe festivals in the world, Fresno's Rogue Fest. There's theater, music, dance, and even magic. And it's happening this week in the Tower District. Today, we have three special guests live in our studio. Marcel Nunes, the founder of Rogue, Heather Parrish, a longtime Fresno performer, and Donna Kay Yarborough, a returning performer from Portland, Oregon. Welcome, all of you.
Thank you. Hi, thanks for having us.
Thanks. So, Marcel, what exactly is a fringe festival?
Well, we'll have to go back into history. In 1947, it started off in Edinburgh as the Edinburgh Arts Festival. There were several groups who were locked out of the festival. So they said, yeah, well, we'll do a festival anyway. And so it was on the fringe of the main festival. And that's how the Fringe Festival was born.
And now there's a huge one there, right?
Yeah. Actually, there are like three or four ongoing. There's the Fringe of the Fringe. Mm-hmm.
And the Fringe of the Fringe of the Fringe.
Yes.
But there are fringe festivals all over the world now.
And you're the brainchild of Rogue. So tell us, how did this crazy festival get started here?
I would go up to San Francisco to the Fringe Festival there and catch shows. We've taken shows up to the San Francisco Fringe. And after a while, some of the people in my theater group said, hey, let's start a festival here.
Mm-hmm.
And being the narcissist and masochist that I am.
Right. It takes both of those, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the festival's done really well here in Fresno. Are you surprised by that?
Yes and no. Early days, we didn't know what. In fact, the first festival that we had, it was going to be a one-off, and it depended on audience support. And I had a magic number. If it surpassed that magic number, then we could continue.
And it did. Heather, you're a longtime performer at Rogue and the former executive director. Mm-hmm. The festival is non-juried. Can you tell us what that means for artists like you and the audience?
Yes. It means that basically there's nobody who is a gatekeeper. We choose people through a lottery system where they put in an application, we give them a random number, and then we choose them randomly. And so that means that there's nobody saying, hey, this show is inappropriate, or this show doesn't meet the quality standards, or this show is not right for this community. So that gives artists the opportunity to present exactly what they feel inside their souls, inside their brains, to the world without somebody saying, no, you're not right for this.
Right. So there's no judgment as to whether it's good or bad.
Correct. And we're also a non-juried festival, which means that we only give one award, which is the sold-out award. Did you get butts in the seats?
And who's sold out so far?
Actually, Jaguar Bennett's Jaguar Saves America. He has sold out both of his first two shows, mostly, I think, because people found out that other people were walking out of his shows because they were so...
controversial?
It's a politics show, so it's controversial. Who else has sold out? I can't remember.
Eulogy.
Lark. Eulogy has sold
Eulogy,
out.
Yeah.
And he's another traveling fringe performer who's a guest in town. And Lark, which is a Celtic music group from here in Fresno.
Right. So you have performers from all over, not just in Fresno. I'm curious, what does it take to put this festival together? There's a lot of coordinating, a lot of volunteering,
yes,
bringing people in.
We generally eventually book about 50 different acts in about 7 different official venues and then another 4 or 5 BYOV, Artist Underground venues, which the artists control. And so we need the artists to come in with their art. We coordinate about 100 different volunteers in different aspects, from the staff down to the ticket tables. And then we need the audiences to show up.
And how do you find volunteers?
Well, most of them are recruited from people who come to the shows that are interested in becoming more involved. And a lot of them are from the arts community around Fresno as well.
So, Donna,
yes,
you've been on the edge of the fringe circuit, and you've been coming here for several years. What's unique about Rogue in comparison to other fringe festivals?
Well, I will tell you this, that the rumbles amongst those that tour the fringe circuit, everybody just kind of knows that Rogue is one of the friendliest festivals out there. It's very, very early in the year. So not only is the community very welcoming and very supportive, a lot of people have discovered that this is a fantastic place to launch new shows. As a matter of fact, all four of the shows I'm performing this year, Blatant Self-Promotion, have had their initial run in a Fringe Festival here at Rogue Festival.
So Rogue's a friendly festival.
It is a very friendly festival, and it is a quality festival, too. It is, especially in the fairness, as Heather can speak more on, it's about 50% local folks and 50% traveling folks. And it is, you will see some high-quality, very experienced artists on the stage here.
Well, speaking of performances, why don't we go around and why don't you tell me what shows you're performing? I know you're performing for Donna. And
yes.
Yeah, give us a little preview of what you're doing.
Well, I have brought back a show from 2 years ago. It's called Query the Crone. I'm doing it at the Tent of Tales, sponsored by Mad Productions, which is actually in Marcel's backyard. And it's an immersive, interactive storytelling show where I'm the wise woman of the woods and the audience has come to me for wisdom, and we do a lot of interaction. It's a very friendly interaction. People don't have to be scared by that. A second show is the one I did last year called Diagnose This, Tales of a Medical Actor, which is my real stories about my work as a standardized patient, aka medical actor, that helps healthcare students learn to do what they do. The brand new one this year is called Klondike Kate's Sourdough Reunion Show. And it's about a true historical figure, a woman named Kathleen Rockwell, Klondike Kate, who became a very famous showgirl in the Yukon and then retired to Oregon and turned over a farm by herself. Just amazing woman. And then I've got an experiment one called Professor Yarbrough's Lecture Hall, which is a fully improvised comedic college lecture where my notes are based on factoids that the audience has written down on note cards, and I just turn them over and read them cold and incorporate it into the lecture.
That sounds terrifying.
It is.
So Marcel, what about you?
I'm bringing back a show called Lies My Father Told Me. I've done this like 3 times before. And the whole series of stories that my dad had told me when I was growing up. And I've kind of strung them together in a show.
And you're performing in your backyard?
In my backyard, in the Tent of Tales. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that. This is a new thing that Rogue is doing.
Yes, Rogue Underground is something that started last year. And what it does is it affords artists who did not get into the Rogue the regular way.
Mm-hmm. By lottery.
To find their own venues and to manage their own venues, basically. So that's part of what Rogue Underground is, yeah.
And how many venues are there for the Rogue Underground? Several?
I think three
actually,
venues.
I think that there's four.
Four venues, yeah.
Yeah, and that's up from one from last year.
Yeah.
So.
And those artists don't get sort of the Rogue support. In other words, they don't have volunteers working with
them,
right?
They don't have box office support or tech support or anything like that.
They do it all themselves.
They do it all themselves. But they are listed in the Rogue program, and they are treated just like any other Rogue artists, as opposed to the pariahs we are.
The advantage that they have is that they get to control their own money. They don't have to worry about anybody else giving them their paycheck on time. They get to control their own times, so they get to have 8 o'clock times if they want the whole time. So whatever they feel like is best for their shows.
2 a.m., whatever.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Like, for instance, all my shows at 7 p.m.
And that works well for you.
That works well for me. Yeah.
Okay, Heather, what about you?
I'm directing a show called Swill, Drunk Shakespeare, and it is actually Drunk Shakespeare. We get about half the cast drunk, and they do a condensed version of Romeo and Juliet in the Tower Theater Lounge. And my other show, the one that I'm actually appearing in, is called Tea Liturgy, which is a music and storytelling show about the creative process.
Okay, and let's segue now to you perhaps doing a little bit of that, right? You're going to read a little bit of Tea Liturgy?
Yeah, I might have a minute or two, if that's
all
right.
Okay, share that with us. Thank you.
We call it Tea Liturgy because we've actually structured it a bit like a liturgy in a worship service, but it is not religious in any way, shape, or form. So this is from my homily. For the last year, I've been in a transition phase, coming out of arts administration with the Rogue Festival and back into the creative world. I was seeking small projects to guide me back to my creative voice. I had been feeling at sea, separate from my inner world and from my passion for living a creative life. So when Victor and I met at Goldstein's to discuss my joining Ardor Evidence as the writer element, I was enthusiastic. I looked forward to writing with some purpose, to working in collaboration with new people, to get my optimism about being a creative artist jump-started again. It was after the second session when phrases like songwriting and singing and backup vocals started coming into the conversation more and more that a new and suspicious thought crept into my consciousness. I went home and said to my husband, "Well, babe, it seems I accidentally joined a band." In my theatrical world, working collaboratively with musicians means talking dramatically while making some sort of soundscape happening behind you. I don't know why I didn't pick up on the fact that they're all musicians, and to musicians, music is going to be a pretty central part of the deal. But I didn't. But at that point, I decided to roll with it. Sure, I hadn't sung a note in public since middle school, but who cares? I hadn't attempted anything musical in over 30 years, no problem. We're not counting that weird production of Hair I directed in 2010. I'm a smart, competent, creative person, right? I ran the Rogue Festival, for crying out loud. I should be able to handle this. So I showed up every week. I took notes. I kept the show Bible. I made observations. I offered suggestions. I participated in the producing tasks. I even sat down with a glass of wine and rhymezone.com and wrote some verses for a song. Every Monday night meeting would come, and I'd say to myself, 80% of a creative life is showing up. Showing up in the room, being open to what challenges come your way, and doing the work even when you don't feel like it.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. So, Donna,
yes.
You're also going to do a little performance for us.
Yeah, I will share a story from Diagnose This, which, again, is my work as a standardized patient. And people always wonder, what is a standardized patient? And I explain to them that when students of healthcare are in their early days of training, they are basically become these feral woodland creatures that are cast out into forest of knowledge, and they're just stuffing their cheeks full of information, and they clutter together for warmth, and you could tell they're really young because they haven't grown in their white coats yet. So we, as the standardized patients, are the first people they talk to that are not involved in the medical field. We're basically their rehabilitators. So they, the students, are so nervous. They will do things that they would never do if they had their wits about them. And one of my favorite experiences is the students have to be very cautious of their cleanliness. They have to wash their hands all the time. If they put on gloves, they can't touch anything. This makes sense in a healthcare environment. And one time I had a student, his name was Rami. All names have been changed to protect the innocent. His name was Rami, and he was polydactyl. He had two thumbs on one hand. It was really wonderful. And he was supposed to do a lymph node exam upon me, which means he had to palpate my neck to check the lymph nodes. And he was getting ready to do it. He was very nervous. The room was very cold. So Rami says, "I'm sorry, my hands are cold. Permit me to warm them up." And Rami goes, he breathes all over his hands, rubs them together, and then reaches to palpate my neck. So when he came back into the room, I wanted to encourage him. So I said, "Rami, it is absolutely wonderful that you cared enough about the comfort of the patient to warm your hands. Did you know you did that handy, breathy, rubby thing?" And he was mortified. He was so nervous that not only did he not know he did that, but he didn't realize that he could have just warmed his hands in the sink that was 2 feet away from him.
Right, something a little cleaner.
Right, but it wasn't a total hand wash, so to speak. At the end of it, I told him that his thumb was a wonderful way to get you to know your patients, the polydactyl thumb. And he looks at me very sheepishly and he goes, "You want to touch it?" And I said, "Yeah, I want to touch it," which would be inappropriate in any other situation. But I figure if I get to touch a polydactyl thumb in a non-creepy manner, I'm doing something right.
So are you going to give us the Was that it?
That was part of it.
Okay, that was part of
that
it.
That was part of the show. That's how natural and
that
casual
was very
the
natural.
Show is.
I didn't know if you were setting us up.
That would be the longest setup in public radio
well,
history.
You know, that's what happens in radio, right?
Yeah.
There are often long setups. But thank you. I loved that.
You're welcome.
I'm never going to look at hands the same way.
Yes.
Especially medical doctor's hands.
Always clean. Always clean.
Okay, so what's the worst show you've ever seen at a Fringe Festival?
I think Marcel and I came to a consensus on this. It was a show from several years back called Santa's Basement.
Yeah.
Well, the name already sounds creepy.
Well, yeah, and I think it was intended to be something of a creepy show, but it wasn't creepy done right.
Yeah.
And so why was
that
it so awful?
Sometimes, Marcel.
It was ill rehearsed, ill written, ill conceived. That. Performers were not very good.
Yeah.
And I think that says it all.
It would just sort of hit all the boxes for bad.
Which sometimes happens at Rogue,
yeah.
right? You've got
right.
some bad shows
One
and some good
One of the
good
things
shows.
About being, you know, a lottery system is that, yeah, you can go from seeing a show that just blows you away to the next show being the worst thing that you've ever seen.
To a show that just blows.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
What percentage of the shows this year do you think are really good?
Well, I mean, as the promo person, I have to say all of them. But
okay, let's pretend you're not the promo person.
On a general thing, I always say that there's probably 85 to 90% of the shows that have a worthwhile element on some level. There's only about 10% that I would be like, no, don't go see that. So, you know.
You're taking your chances.
Yeah, but it is also only an hour. And the cost is low.
Right. All the shows are just an hour.
Yes.
So quickly, we have a little bit of time left. If you've never been to Rogue before, what advice are you going to give this person? I have been to Rogue, but I've never been to Rogue
right.
before. Tell me, what should I do?
Well, pick the program first.
Find a program. Yeah.
Yeah. Pick a show that looks interesting to you. Turn up to that. And right after that show, go to the next thing on a whim.
So just keep going.
Yes.
Take some chances.
Yeah.
Yeah. And okay. you can get set up at your first place. Find a show, get to a table, grab a program, get your wristband, take your tickets in, and try two shows before you make up your mind.
And there's a lot of synergy among performers at Rogue, isn't there?
Yes, there is. We're very close, a lot of us. And people, when they come in new for the first time, I believe we really make an effort to reach out to them and bring mm-hmm. them in and make them feel at home. Mm-hmm. And it helps for the performers to have a better performance as well, because a lot of these people, this is their living, and it just reinforces them and helps them be stronger in that case.
And how many more performances do you have, Donna?
I have one more performance of Diagnose This, one performance of Query the Crone, two more performances of Klondike Kate's Sourdough Reunion Show, and then the one last day performance of Professor Yarbrough's Lecture Hall.
And then you can finally sleep.
Yes, for a few days.
Okay, well, a big thanks to all of you for coming out to the studio, and good luck with the rest of the festival.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You. Yes.